A Timeline of the Russian Revolution in 1917 by the Marxists Internet Archive. January 1. Russian troops tenaciously defend Riga against a German offensive from the Northern Front. While on the Romanian Central Front, troops retreat after a fresh defeat. The Caucasian Southern Front is relatively quiet. Morale in the army is extremely low. The vast majority of soldiers do not believe in the goals of annexing more territory for Russia. 1.5 million soldiers deserted the army in 1916. Many soldiers' families are starving. 50% of the nation's farmers are fighting in the war, and they are being kicked off their land by kulaks. Meanwhile, ethnic minorities continue to suffer severe repression. The Tsar orders the wide-scale firing of all Jews in government, while crippled Jewish soldiers are sent to Siberia. January 9th. The Bolsheviks, whose membership has been steadily increasing to 24,000 people, help organize demonstrations in remembrance of Bloody Sunday. All the main Bolshevik leaders are in prison or exile, so the vast majority of current party decisions are made from the bottom up. 30,000 Moscow workers strike in demonstration, while 145,000 workers strike in Petrograd. Baku, Nizhny Novgorod, Novocherkassk, Voronezh, Kharkov, Rostov-on-Don, the Donbass area, and other cities also conduct a one-day strike. January 26. The workers' group, a part of the War Industries Committee, has its members arrested by the secret police after appealing for a new provisional government. January 31. Petrograd is starving. The city stockpile for flour will last only 10 more days. Meat supplies are completely depleted. Massive queues for food form, despite excruciatingly cold temperatures. Crowds of women sporadically break into stores. February 10. The Councilor of State, Mikhail Razienko, meets with Tsar Nicholas II in Tsarskoye Selo and warns him of massive upheaval throughout the country. Razienko insists that ultimate events can be avoided by strengthening the Duma. Nicholas II ignores this advice. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks call a strike in Petrograd to protest the 1915 arrest of their Duma members for opposing the war. February 14. The strike called by the Bolsheviks continues. While a Menshevik called strike begins to show support for the Duma at Tarida Palace, which opens a new session, 90,000 workers are on strike from 58 different factories. Police attempt to arrest the demonstrators, but they fight the police back. No workers march on Tarida Palace, as the Mensheviks had hoped. The Bolshevik Petrograd Committee calls on workers to overthrow the Tsar. February 22nd. The Tsar leaves for general headquarters in Mogilev. Meanwhile, the bosses of the Pulitilov plant lock out striking workers. February 23rd. The February Revolution begins, ignited by International Women's Day. Militant women textile workers, many of whom are soldiers' wives, initiate a massive strike in Petrograd, despite the protests of their own union leadership. 128,000 workers take to the streets, and among their chief demands is an end to the world war and an increase in food. Bourgeois history recounts this organized movement as bread riots. February 24th. The strike doubles in size to around 200,000 workers. Nearly half of all industrial workers in Petrograd are on strike, The new demands of the strike shift heavily toward overthrowing the autocracy and putting an end to the war. Striking workers fraternize with soldiers and Cossacks while bitterly hating the police. February 25th. Vyborg Bolshevik workers break into police stations and cut the telephones to government offices. Armed clashes with police occur, with many killed and wounded. Meanwhile, Empress Alexandra writes to Nicholas II, "This is a hooligan campaign, with boys and girls running about shouting that they have no bread. All this will surely pass." General Kabalov, commander of the Petrograd district, acting under the Tsar's orders, threatens that he will use any means necessary to ban all demonstrations. February 26th. Early Sunday morning, the police launch wide-scale arrests of over 100 leaders of revolutionary organizations, including the Bolsheviks. General Kabalov's soldiers, acting under the Tsar's orders, open fire on striking workers. 169 workers are killed, and over 1,000 people are injured. By 4 p.m., the 4th Company of the Pavlovsky Regiment, outraged that part of their regiment fired on workers, rushes into the street to subdue them. On the way, police try to stop the company, and a firefight ensues. General Kabalov orders the company to disarm. Some soldiers refuse and join the protesters. Bolshevik workers in the Vyborg district plan to push events into an armed uprising. February 27th. Bolshevik agitators visit with soldiers from the Volnyovsky regiment with the intention of merely starting a good relationship. Before noon, the soldiers decide to kill the commander of the company that fired on the demonstrators the previous day. The soldiers arm themselves and spread the agitation throughout their entire regiment. By afternoon, the Litovsky and Preobrazhensky regiments join this new army, and they storm the main arsenal, liberating 40,000 rifles. Fully armed, they move on to liberate political prisoners from Kretsky jail. February 27th. By nightfall, 66,000 men of the Petrograd garrison, a day ago ordered to fire on striking workers, have now joined the striking workers, fully armed. The Bolsheviks continue agitating for the creation of a new government, and the elected delegates, workers, peasants, and soldiers, of the Petrograd Soviet arrive at Taruda Palace, creating an executive committee. While the Bolshevik rank and file had been incredibly successful at creating a revolutionary movement, they were unable to get good results in elections to the Soviet. The Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries, who promised everything, fare much better. Both parties believe the current revolution needs to be capitalist before the nation can move into socialism in the unforeseen future, following a political theory called stagism. The Menshevik Nikolaya Chetsky becomes leader of the Soviet. Meanwhile, the wheels of the old order keep turning. Rodzianko asks the Duma to convene to resolve on a course of action. The group creates a provisional committee, which urgently asks the Tsar to save himself by sharing power with a prime minister. The Tsar refuses. February 28th. The revolutionary masses seize the city of Moscow. The Tsar's ministers are arrested. The provisional committee assumes control of the army, while the Kronstadt's soldiers mutiny against their officers. The first issue of Izvestia is published, a newspaper of the Petrograd Soviet. March 1st. The first joint plenum of the Soviet of Workers' and Soldiers' Deputies issues Soviet Order No. 1. All soldiers' units will elect soldiers' committees. The decree stipulates that soldiers will now accept orders from the soldiers' Soviet and their locally elected committees. The Soviet also forbids its members from joining the soon-to-form government, but recognizes the authority of the Duma. March 2nd. The Soviet and Duma continue discussions on the formation of a new government. At the Soviet plenum, the Bolsheviks criticize the lack of focus on questions of land, peace, and the 8-hour working day. On the request of the Provisional Committee, Nicholas II abdicates power to his brother Mikhail, who refuses power. Thus end their hopes to keep the monarchy alive, side by side to the new provisional government. Workers, soldiers, and young people take to the streets, tearing down statues of the Tsar, and set alight the imperial emblems of old. Loyalist police ambush and shoot the revelers, but armed Soviet soldiers hunt the police down and arrest them. Whenever a cop is uncovered in the middle of a crowd, however, their fate is much more severe. March 3rd. The Executive Committee of the Petrograd Soviet orders the arrest of Nicholas II. March 5th. The first issue of Pravda is published, since being closed down as a result of its peaceful stance on the World War. March 6th. The Provisional Government declares a general amnesty for all political prisoners. March 8th. The Petrograd Soviet creates the Contact Commission as an organ of communication with the Provisional Government. Meanwhile, the Provisional Government refuses to allow Finland the independence it demands for its people. March 9th. The United States of America is the first government in the world to formally recognize the new provisional government. 2 days later, France, England, and Italy would follow suit after receiving assurance that the government would continue to wage war. March 12th. Stalin arrives in Petrograd after being released from prison. 3 days later, he is appointed to the editorial board of Pravda. Also on the 12th, the provisional government repeals the death penalty. March 14th. The Petrograd Soviet addresses the people of the whole world, declaring an earnest desire for peace and an end to World War I without annexations or indemnities. March 17th. Poland appeals for independence from Russia. The provisional government refuses. March 18th. Stalin becomes a member of the Executive Committee of the Petrograd Soviet of Workers' and Soldiers' Deputies. March 19th. The provisional government refuses to pass an agrarian act for the desperate food crisis in the nation and the wide-scale disenfranchisement of the peasantry. Instead, the government condemns looters and forced seizures of the land. March 20th. The provisional government abolishes all religious and ethnic restrictions formerly imposed by the monarchy. Non-Russian languages are now allowed at private educational institutions and record keeping. March 21 through the 22nd. Lenin's Letters from Afar are published, though highly abridged. March 27th. Trotsky leaves exile in New York to return to Russia. Meanwhile, the provisional government declares that its purpose in continuing the war is solely for the defense of Russia. This serves as a compromise position with the Petrograd Soviet, which accepts this new formulation. March 31st. Plekhanov arrives in Petrograd after nearly 40 years in exile. Plekhanov is a different man from when he left, now supporting the war for territory and the advance of capitalism in Russia. April 3rd. Lenin, Zinoviev, and other Bolsheviks arrive in Petrograd from exile in Switzerland. They are met at the train station by a large contingent of jubilant workers, soldiers, and party members. April 4th. Lenin delivers his April thesis. The Bolsheviks soon produce an educational pamphlet for workers on political parties in Russia and the tasks of the proletariat. Meanwhile, the steamer Trotsky is traveling on is stopped for inspection by the British Navy in Canada, and despite the general amnesty and having his visa in order, he is thrown into a British prison along with several other socialists for their opposition to the war. April 12th. The provisional government passes a law allowing the freedom of meetings and unions. April 18th. Massive May Day celebrations occur throughout Russia. Meanwhile, Foreign Minister Mulakov secretly promises the Allies that Russia will continue the war until complete victory and the annexation of new territory is achieved. Mulakov's secret note is leaked on April 20th, prompting armed demonstrations of furious soldiers in the streets for 2 days. The Bolsheviks resolve that the resignation of Mulakov is not enough. A new Soviet government must be formed, and party members are given these new instructions. May 1st, the Petrograd Soviet votes in favor of forming a new coalition government, despite Bolshevik condemnation and in contradiction to the March 1 decision of the Soviet. Weeks earlier, Lenin warned about the dangers of this new dual power. Mulakov's resignation comes on the following day. May 4th, Trotsky arrives in Russia after being released from prison by the British government. May 10th, the Soviet of Workers' and Soldiers' Deputies resolves that only discharged and wounded soldiers can perform as militiamen. Lenin explains his critique. May 17th, the Kronstadt Soviet declares itself the sole governing power of Kronstadt. May 31st, Minister of War Gouchov, a member of the Cadet Party, resigns after street demonstrations against him. Kerensky replaces him. June 3rd. The first All-Russian Congress of Soviets begins in Petrograd. The Congress almost unanimously agrees to end World War I, though only through tremendous consternation agrees to support the provisional government despite Bolshevik protests. Tensions flare between the parties, with the Mensheviks insisting that the Bolsheviks must be disarmed, despite their not having weapons, which would in practice mean disarming the soldiers' Soviets. The thermidor of the February Revolution is beginning to boil. The Bolsheviks insist that all power must go to the Soviets. June 5th. The parliament in Finland, which is still a territory of Russia, declare Finland a sovereign state, except on questions of foreign policy and war. The provisional government sends troops to crush the parliament, which soon wavers and votes in favor of their own dissolution. June 10th. The Central Rada, formed in Kiev on March 4th, proclaim the independence of the Ukraine. The ongoing Congress of Soviets unanimously supports this declaration of independence. Meanwhile, the demonstration the Bolsheviks plan to hold against the government is banned. The Mensheviks then go factory to factory, telling workers not to stage a demonstration. The workers, in turn, berate the Mensheviks. The Mensheviks see a massive conspiracy, explaining the masses are thick with Bolsheviks, and secretly ask the Cossacks to help them crush the Bolsheviks, to which the Cossack Ottoman replies, "We, Cossacks, will never go against the Soviet." Whole regiments accept the ban on the demonstration solely on the basis of Bolshevik acceptance, whose party policy wholly accepts any and all decisions of the Soviet. June 11th. The Mensheviks continue their assault on the Bolsheviks, agitating that they be arrested, and claim the party is controlled by Germany. After days of debate, the Mensheviks drop their demand to disarm the workers. Further, realizing their support would vaporize following the dispersal of the June 10th protests, the Mensheviks put forward a motion to hold demonstrations on the 18th, and the Soviet passes the motion. June 18th. Kerensky launches a fresh offensive on the Eastern Front, despite incredibly low morale, poor supplies and logistics, and in the absence of sound strategic thinking. German counterattacks bring devastating losses. 150,000 Russians are killed, with nearly 250,000 wounded. The pro-peace Bolsheviks show their massive support with an enormous demonstration against the war of 400,000 workers and soldiers in Petrograd, Moscow, Kiev, Kharkov, and other cities, nearly all protesters carrying banners echoing the Bolshevik line. Meanwhile, under the cover of the demonstrations, the anarchists attack several prisons, liberating 460 criminals. The provisional government turns this into propaganda, claiming the Bolsheviks helped. Many of the Petrograd anarchists are arrested. June 21st. After the demonstration of the 18th, workers at the Putilov factory go on strike. The Bolsheviks, together with workers from 70 other factories, meet with the Putilov workers, sympathize with their grievances, but call for restraint. Workers are starving. Soldiers demand to be sent home to plow the fields. The 1st Machine Gun Regiment declares that detachments shall be sent to the front only when the war has a revolutionary character. Entire divisions of soldiers are arrested for disobedience. Soldiers are constantly demanding that Bolsheviks immediately overthrow the government, but the Bolsheviks need the support of the entire Soviet. Lenin understands that the present calamities will lead to a change in the Soviet, which will then enable a real, democratic Soviet revolution. June 23rd. The Kronstadt anarchists demand the liberation of Petrograd anarchists. Otherwise, they promise to liberate them by force. June 24th. Izvestia reports plans by the provisional government to close a series of factories in Petrograd, potentially leaving thousands jobless. Meanwhile, the Orenbon garrisons inform the government that they support Kronstadt. June 26th. The Grenadier Guard Regiment returns from the front and joins the Kronstadt anarchists. July 1st. The 2nd Machine Gun Regiment demands all power to the Soviets, while the 3rd Infantry Regiment refuses to send 14 replacement companies to the front. Meanwhile, the 1st Machine Gun Regiment marches to Oranban, to Petrograd. The Soviet Executive Committee, now sharing power with the provisional government, tells them to go home, but the soldiers refuse. The Bolsheviks organize for the machine gunners to have food and quarters. According to the historian observer Sukhanov, in these days, Petrograd felt itself to be upon the verge of some sort of explosion. July 3rd, also known as the beginning of the July days. After receiving an order to go to the front, thousands of machine gunners hold a meeting about an armed insurrection. The Bolsheviks try to cool things off, while the anarchists stoke the fire. The soldiers decide to march, fully armed, and send delegates from one factory after another, with workers dropping everything to join the march. Tens of thousands go marching, demanding all power to the Soviets. The Bolsheviks change tactics. No longer trying to restrain the masses, they agree to support them, so long as they peacefully march to the seat of government, elect delegates, and present their demands to the Executive Committee of the Soviets. The masses agree. Meanwhile, the government spends the entire day calling on troops from across the country to come in defense of the capital. The Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries decry the Bolsheviks for the insurrection, claiming they are threatening the Soviets. The leadership of the Petrograd Soviet changes its composition and becomes a Bolshevik majority. Further strengthening the Bolshevik majority, the Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries refuse to cooperate and walk out, having lost their majority power. They remain in control, however, of the Soviet Executive Committee. And thus, the ravine deepens further between the local Soviets and the Soviet Executive Committee. At 3 a.m., 80,000 workers and soldiers reach the Tverada Palace. Junkers meet the demonstrators and tear up placards. A shot is fired, but disaster is averted. The Bolsheviks spend the early hours of morning figuring out how to organize the demonstrators. July 4th, by 11 a.m., the demonstrators assemble yet again. Now entire regiments arrive, but they are no longer at the front of the demonstrations. The workers have taken the lead by sheer mass of numbers. Even in factories where the Mensheviks and SRs hold influence, 4 out of 5 workers join the demonstrations. The nation witnesses a massive general strike. Lenin speaks to the demonstrators, encouraging their slogan of all power to the Soviets. Over 500,000 people attend the demonstrations in Petrograd. The 1st of the soldiers from the front arrive to support the provisional government, and frightened that a revolution is imminent, are ordered to launch ambushes against the masses. 400 people are killed and wounded. The Mensheviks, with their hands covered in blood, eventually convince the demonstrators to go home. July 5th. At 6 a.m., the government begins the offensive. The offices and printing machinery of Pravda are once again destroyed. Workers distributing the paper are murdered in the streets. Ironically, the last documents to come from the press are the continued Bolshevik position of stopping the demonstration. Government agents then ransack the headquarters of the Bolshevik Central Committee and Petrograd Committee. Union and Soviet workers are arrested en masse from factories and meeting halls in retaliation for their leadership of the demonstrations. Wide-scale fear and intimidation grips the city as the police presence intensifies to an almost martial law status. The mere mention of Lenin or the Bolsheviks is cause for arrest. July 6th. Around 120 Kronstadt sailors refuse to give in and retreat to the Peter and Paul fortress. Red Guards, which are militias of regularly factory workers, set up a barricade and begin a siege. Stalin mediates and reaches an agreement with both sides. The Kronstadters will disarm in return for getting free passage back to Kronstadt. The general strike comes to an end, and workers return to their jobs, fearful of arrest. The government-induced terror becomes near hysteria, and countless numbers are arrested as spies. All troops called in from the front arrive in Petrograd in a massive show of force. July 7th. The Provisional Government orders the arrest of Lenin, claiming that he is a German spy and that the Bolsheviks incited the uprising. The Provisional Government further orders the disbandment of the Petrograd garrison. July 8th. Kerensky becomes the head of government after Lvov resigns. The Provisional Government attempts to improve public relations and announces that it will hold elections to the Constituent Assembly on September 17th, work on legislation for the 8-hour day, create better labor safety, and carry out land reform. None of these promises would be kept. July 11th, Lenin goes into hiding. July 12th, the Provisional Government reintroduces a law allowing drumhead trials at the front, which are summary executions for retreating, disobedience, and so on. Furthermore, all radical political ideals are censored, and many newspapers are shut down. On the 19th, Lenin responds that a workers' government will close down all bourgeois newspapers. July 18th. General Kornilov becomes the supreme commander-in-chief of the Russian armed forces. July 24th. The second coalition government is formed. Kerensky appoints himself president. The Mensheviks, cadets, and socialist revolutionaries join the government. July 26th through August 3rd. The 6th Congress of the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, Bolsheviks, occurs, representing 240,000 party members. Since Lenin is in hiding, Stalin delivers the report on the work of the Central Committee. The Congress resolves that a peaceful revolution has become impossible. Further, the party decides on the principle of democratic centralism. August. Since March, 568 enterprises, laying off more than 104,000 workers, have closed down. Prices, on average, have risen by 248% compared to 1913 prices, though urban centers are hit the hardest. In Moscow, prices inflated by 836%. Meanwhile, real wages fell by 54% since 1913.